Hey guys, once again, I'm sad that I'm not with you this morning. I'm over in Maple Ridge at a camp called Timberline Ranch. We've got a weekend retreat going for middle schoolers where I get to speak and share with them the good news of who Jesus is and what it means to follow in Jesus's way. And I'm loving getting to be there. But this morning, I am also praying for you guys as you gather, as I'm not there with you. And I'm also really excited because this morning you get to hear from one of my really good friends named Zach. Zach's an amazing dude. He used to be on staff at Village Church. Maybe you're thinking, didn't we just have a guest from Village Church? Don't worry, they're not trying to take over. There's just a lot of them. But he was on staff there for a long time as their online pastor and some other roles. Now he's working for a Baptist denomination called Fellowship, kind of doing a role a little bit similar to what Shell is now doing, just for a different denomination of churches. Zach's an amazing dude. I first met Zach a couple years ago. He was part of this leadership cohort that I was part of with 17 pastors from across Canada. And I met him at this retreat that we started the whole thing off with. We went to Barnabas Retreat Center on Keats Island. It's an amazing place. And on kind of the bus ride out there, I ended up sitting on the bus beside Zach. Now, it's kind of one of those things where you don't really know people there. So you're like, who do I sit with? I'm so glad I decided to sit beside Zach. Zach, right away, I discovered was just this caring, genuine person who cared deeply about people, but also cares deeply about God and his relationship and other people's relationships with God. Zach and I have built a pretty awesome friendship over the last couple of years, and he has been like such a huge supporter and encourager, even in some pretty tough moments for me. And so I'm so thankful for who he is. And I'm sure as he speaks this morning, you'll get to experience some of that and you'll see some of that shine through this amazing dude. So I'm so honored that Zach would take some time to come and share with us this morning. So would you join me as we give Zach a warm welcome as he comes to teach us this morning?
Wow. What an intro. The guy's not even here. He gives an intro like that. That saved me a lot of time because I didn't know he was going to do that. And that's like half of my talk was just introing how and why I'm here. Like Ryan said, we've become pretty good friends over the past couple of years. And I really enjoy being friends with Ryan. He is a different dude, but that's what I love about him. And Ryan's actually preached one of my favorite sermons of all time. He actually just got up one time and just preached the Sermon on the Mount word for word. And I listened to that. I was like blown away. I was like, yeah, this is like the one sermon Jesus gives us. And we don't like just preach that as a sermon. And I was like, dude, like you read off the Sermon on the Mount. He's like, no, I memorized it. I was like, no. He's like, yeah, I memorized it. So after that, I was blown away by Ryan and his love for God and just preaching. So like Ryan said, my name is Zach. If you're new here, welcome, because I'm new as well. And if you're not new, then you're probably thinking, who's this bad Clark Kent impersonator up here? Hello, thank you. I'm really excited to share out God's word today. We're going to be reading out 1 Corinthians 12, so if you have a Bible, you can open it up. I'm going to be speaking out of the ESV version, but all versions are great. And just a little bit more about me. As Ryan said, I was a pastor for 8 years at Village Church. Now I help more province-wide with leadership development and next-gen ministries. And that frees up my Sunday to do cool things like this. So I live in Surrey with my wife. And we've been married for about 8 years. And just 2 months ago, I became a father to a beautiful baby girl, Daisy. So that is the new joy in my life. And going back, I didn't really grow up in church. Like this stuff is all kind of still new to me. I grew up in a home that was honestly a little bit more atheistic. And I actually heard the gospel for the very first time when I was in grade 12. I got invited to this thing called Young Life, and it was fun, and I was nodding heads, great. Yeah, Young Life's like a youth ministry, and there's fun games, and I loved it. I was like, this is like, I was kind of mad. I was like, why didn't anyone invite me to this sooner? Like, this is so great. And at the end, someone gives a life talk, and they tell a story from their life, and they tell a story from the life of Jesus. I wasn't really paying attention to the talk. There's just some cute girls around, so that's what I wanted to be. That summer, I got invited to camp, and that's really where I heard the gospel for the very first time. The fact that God created us to be in relationship with him. And that, for me, answered a question that I didn't know I was asking. I was looking for meaning. I was looking for purpose and what would fulfill that in my identity, in different relationships. And the reason I was looking for that is because I was built for that. And the only thing that would fully satisfy me is the God of the universe that built me to be in a relationship with him. So that just clicked for me. And I remember the next couple of years, I got to really form my faith with these group of leaders and my community that I was part of Young Life. I started going to church too. And I remember that it was really the relationships that formed me. It was about the community that I was in. And it was cool. I love joining here. I really feel blessed I get to come and speak here this morning because I get to visit a lot of different churches in my role. And your liturgy that you were doing is something quite special. And not a lot of churches practice it like you do. And so I just want to honor you and really encourage you in that. And I was reminded as we were doing that, that think about this whole thing, even just church as general. We're coming here, we're worshiping God together, we're sharing a message, we're joining in a greater community across all of Lower Mainland, BC, Canada, all parts of the world, and we're worshiping God together in a community of believers. And so this idea of community, it's local, but it's also universal. So for me, I got to be in a group, in a community of people, and that was what really formed my faith. I wouldn't have been able to do it without these people around me. We have to do life together. I think this is a really important message because in our world, especially in the Lower Mainland, in Vancouver, it is an isolated world. You know, we can get into our cars, in our garage. Maybe not in all parts of Vancouver. I'm from Surrey. There's more garages there. We can get into our car without seeing anyone, drive to work, do our work, drive home. We can order, you know, skip the dishes. We can get groceries delivered to us. We can do life without seeing anyone. It's really easy. You know, all the technology makes that really easy. But that's not how God created us. We need to be in relationship with other people. So that's really what I want to focus on today. 1 Corinthians 12:26. And so let's just read this together. So starting in verse 12. For just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. So in one spirit, we were all baptized into one body, Jews and Greeks, slaves and free, and we were all made to drink of one spirit. So the book of Corinthians, Paul is writing this letter to the church of Corinth. Now, the church of Corinth at the time was a very divided church. It was totally messed up. And so maybe that applies to church today. I don't know. You can take that for what you want. But if you've ever thought to yourself, you know, am I not worthy? Am I not good enough? Am I supposed to be here? You can read this and think and just relate to the church of Corinth. And so the first thing that Paul is describing, the community of church as a body. So he's going to go through this whole text and kind of describe church and use this analogy, and it is an analogy, as a body. And he's trying to really describe what is church supposed to be like. And so it's made up of many different parts. And I think it's a great analogy because we all have a body. We can all relate to our own body in this. So you can think about that. So one body is not the whole, one part is not the whole body, right? That's what Paul is saying right here. So there are parts of the body, and so it is with the church. And all of us are part of the body. And I know that right away, our natural way of thinking is being like, well, who am I? Well, if we're all part of the body, then what part of the body am I? And that's okay. I think that's actually a very healthy way of thinking. You know, our society actually wants to know this too. I think it's the way of the rise of all these personality tests, right? There's like Myers-Briggs, StrengthFinders, Enneagram, Berkman, Color Test, 16 Personalities, the BuzzFeed quiz about what Disney princess you are. I'm Ariel, just, you know. The important thing to note here is that, yes, we should know what part of the body that we are, but the first thing that we have to realize is that Paul assigns no value to the different parts. He's emphasizing that the value is in the body, and all parts are needed to make up the body. So anyone who's part of the body has the same value. And so our goal is not to have value in our parts, but our goal is to understand our part and be part of the body. So that'll be our goal today. And I think it's really easy to get in this game of comparison when we're trying to understand what part should I be, and we start to look at other people and what part they are. And I'm guilty of this. I do this all the time. In 2020, I graduated with my master's degree in divinity. It was really hard, but I was proud of myself. I did it. But after that, I kind of became allergic to books. I was like, I did enough reading for like 3 years. Like, I just can't take a break. And so I had this pastor friend who at the time was working at Village, and this other pastor, and he just read so many books. Like, he was reading a book a day, I swear. And he was like, every conversation, he's like, that reminds me of this book I was reading. And he's like, you should read this book. You'd love it. And I was like, am I a bad person? Am I a bad pastor? Am I a bad Christian? Like, I don't want to read any books. But it was important for me to know. And since then, I'm glad to say I've read more books. So, like, I've gotten over it. But I'm still not a reader like him. Like, I'm not reading books I read a couple books a year, you know, whatever. But if I were to compare myself to him, then I would fail every single day of the week. If I would say, well, am I learning? Am I a ferocious learner? Am I a reader? Am I growing every day? If that's what growing every day looks like, then I'm a failure. But it's not, you know, there's strength that he has and there's strength that I have. So it's within myself to understand myself more. It's one of the best things we can do as Christians. There's this concept that we love to teach about, and it's one of the big values in the work I do. It's about emotional intelligence. It's about looking inside. So there's IQ, and then we call this EQ, emotional intelligence. And what's great about emotional intelligence is that you can actually grow it. Your IQ is set. Whatever you got, you got. And that's like, but your EQ, so don't worry about that one, whatever you have. But your EQ, you can actually grow. And so the idea about emotional intelligence, it goes to self-awareness, leads to self-management, leads to social awareness, leads to social management. So I'll say that again because it's a great thing to know. So self-awareness leads to self-management, leads to social awareness, leads to social management. So that's why the more we understand ourselves, we can identify what's happening in here, the more we can start to manage it. And that lets us go and manage what's happening out here and be aware of what's happening, our interaction with other people. And I think it's a great gift of us as Christians that we can actually go into the world and start to manage it, because we're not reactive on what we're receiving based on our maybe insecurities or hurts or our idea of values. We can say, well, I understand that you think that, and that might hurt me. And I understand that it might hurt me, so I'll deal with that later in a healthier place. But now I can have this conversation in a way that's helpful for you, and then I'll go deal with my own stuff. So this is really important for us to understand and deal with. Okay, let's keep going. Verse 14. For the body does not consist of one member, but of many. And if the foot should say, because I'm not a hand, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I'm not an eye, I don't belong to the body, that would make it any less part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing? If the whole body were an ear, where would the sense of smell? But as it is with God, arranged all the members in... God arranged all the members in the body, each one of them as he chose. If we're all a single member, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, yet one body. I just like this verse because I think it's funny that, like, imagining parts talking to each other, like, I'm not an eye, I'm not a foot. So, Paul's describing that many parts coming together is what makes up completeness. Completeness is the goal, that many become one. We have to recognize that each different part makes up the wholeness of the body. And I think differentness is really hard. I don't know if that's a word, but I'm going to use it a lot. Differentness is really hard for us. It seems that, like, you know, the pandemic, COVID, really unlocked this thing where it's like, here's this really controversial thing. You have to show us what you think about it. And it just divided us. And it even feels like a little, like, scary to bring something up like that here. But I think it's important that we talk about it. And now it just seems like everything's divided. What political stance do you have? What do you believe about X? I see that you guys are doing awesome Preston Sprinkle study. We're reading that Preston Sprinkle's book. Just another example of, like, what do you believe? And be like, okay, that is your identity. I had this friend who was leading a small group, and they decided to get vaccinated, and they were talking to someone in their group, and they're like, yeah, we got vaccinated. And she just said, oh, well, it was really great being your friend, and then walked away. And it was like, because you made that decision, we no longer can chat. And so this is just one example of the many different, but I think it's a big example of all differentness. What does differentness look like? Can you talk to someone who you completely disagree with on a subject? And so what does it look like to actually come together in our differences? And for me, when I think about God's truth and when I am studying God's truth, I believe that it's universal. Like, if something's true for God and true what his word says, then we should be able to find examples in the world. And it, like, almost a sociology like idea that's like, if it's true, God's word is going to be true universally. So I was thinking about this. I was like, where can I find an example? I started going to a list of the biggest franchises in the world. I was going through them. They're like Marvel and Harry Potter. And one of the top ones I saw was Power Rangers. I was like, what? How is Power Rangers on the top list of biggest franchises? It's worth $15 billion. And the reason I'm so perplexed is because Power Rangers is the stupidest show ever. It's horrible. Because every single episode is the exact same. Let me explain. Some of you, I hear some, like, you might know what I'm talking about. If you don't know, let me just save you the trouble. I'll explain what every single episode of Power Rangers is. So this is what happens. Bad guy shows up. Then all the Power Rangers suit up. They try to fight the bad guy. They can't beat him. So they put all their super weapons together, or their weapons together to make a super weapon. They defeat the bad guy. He becomes the size of a skyscraper. They all get in their robots, and they try to fight him. Then all the robots come together, make a superhuman robot, and they defeat the bad guy. And that happens every single episode. I'm like, how is this worth $15 billion? But as we look to this, what a great story. Idea of coming together to defeat the enemy. And it's like, that's why that resonates with us. The idea that if we come together, I'm only the left leg, but if I come together with a couple other people, we can create a humanoid and defeat the bad guy. And this is the example, and as much as I hate it, like, this is what the church is. This is, if we come together, we can achieve more. We can do more. We can become more. what would it look like for you to take your gifts, me to take my gifts, you to take your gifts, come together and create the super gifts to really achieve what we need to? You know, if the blue Power Ranger just stayed home, there'd be no like left leg. It wouldn't work. The completeness wouldn't be there. And as much as what Paul is saying, the eye or the ear, if you don't think it's needed, the completeness is not there without it. The smaller parts are needed in the body. They are actually essential to doing anything. And I kind of experienced this really early on in my ministry. I started working in kids' ministry. And it was just like where they needed help. When I first became a Christian, like I said, I started going to Young Life. And then we started attending church. And I was like, okay, what do I do here? And they were like, we serve, we do things. I was like, yeah, sign me up. I'll do whatever. Kids' ministry, great. And so I started doing that. And then my first job, official like role in church, was in kids' ministry. I remember telling people like, oh, what do you do for work? I'm like, oh, I work in kids' ministry. And people would always say like, oh, that's fun. And it's kind of like, oh, that's cute. Like, that's nice. Okay, let's have other conversation. And I was like, oh, that kind of is like a bit of my insecurity, right? But it was like a dagger because I was like, I don't see it as just like cute as in like maybe the connotation is meaningless or like not mean anything. I actually see it as important. You know, I saw my role, like, yeah, shout out. Like, kids ministry is very important. And I agree. I saw it as like, well, I organized lessons that were building a foundation of the gospel of the next generation. I organized dozens of volunteers. There was a big team at the time. I was training up the volunteers to know how to teach the gospel, what it means to serve. I actually learned of many Bible stories by teaching kids ministry for the very first time. I knew that was true for many of the leaders. I was making sure that the programs were fun and exciting for any new kids. So fun that if they would beg their parents to come back to church next week. This was all hard, important work. And if I were to believe that this was just fun or cute or just like, that's good, but push it aside based on what other people thought of it, then I wouldn't do it. But there would be missing a deep and important work that's needed. And so I couldn't take my cues from other people. I had to take cues on what was true. So let's keep going. Verse 21. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. Nor the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, the parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. That just reiterates that point. I'll say it again. The parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And I just want to pause there because I think there's times that we see what we're doing as weaker. And we just need to know that God sees you and what you're doing as indispensable, whatever it may be, at all times. Placed you in your particular place for a purpose. And he goes on to say, and on those parts of the body that we think are less honorable, we bestow the greatest honor. And our unpresentable parts are treated with greater modesty, which our more presentable parts do not require. But God has so composed the body, giving greater honor to the part that lacked it, that there may be no division in the body, but the members may have all the same care for one another. If one member suffers, all suffer together. If one member is honored, all rejoice together. Now you are the body of Christ and individually members of it. I love that last line. Hear that. You are the body of Christ and individually members of it. Now as much as we desire to be part of a team and a community, this is really hard for us. I think we naturally just strive to find like-minded people, right? Like even clubs and groups, it's like, hey, if we all think like this, if we all have this common interest. Let's all like get together in one room. But the gospel speaks directly to this. See, our world preaches shallow community. Find people that have similar interests that are like you. That's what we'll form groups around. You know, a bunch of eyes coming together, just looking around, or a bunch of ears just hearing, you know. But the gospel says that we are actually like-minded in Jesus. What's happening here is Paul's starting to set different levels. And he says, listen, if we're aligned on the most important thing, we can actually be disaligned on everything else. And so in our world, we start to value, you start to see people's values, right? Like my friends that had the vaccine. And so for her, she's like, this is a high value for me. And so if someone doesn't agree, we can't be friends. But when we're followers of Jesus, we can actually say, like, my top priority is Jesus. Everything else is underneath that. And so especially for followers of Jesus, we can be like-minded and say, hey, you know Jesus? I know Jesus. And this was crazy for me. This was one of the biggest first things that I realized. I didn't grow up in a Christian home, like I said. And I didn't really think much about this, but as I've reflected back, I remember that my mom accidentally signed me up for like a VBS, like a kids' Bible thing. It was like over spring break. And I remember I went to it and it was like, we did the crafts and whatever. It was fun. And at the end of the week, I gave all my mom, like all the stuff I had collected throughout the week. And there must have been a cassette tape. And this is not telling of my age. I'm not that old, but of the church technology at the time. And it must have said like Jesus or the Bible. And she saw it and she realized, oh my goodness, I signed up for a Christian camp. And she said to me, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. You never have to go to anything like that again. So that was a little bit of my upbringing. I didn't think much of it at the time. It was normative to me. But then when I became a Christian in high school, I started hanging out with my Young Life leaders. That's how I became, you know, discipled. And then I started growing up. I started going to different churches and different Christian events. And then just out in the wild, I'd meet another Christian. And I thought it was like so exciting. I was like, you're a Christian? I'm a Christian. Like, this is amazing. And what was so surprising to me is that I was never really met with the same excitement. Like, I was like, I'm a Christian, I know Jesus. And they're like, okay, cool, chill out, weirdo. And that kind of bothered me, because what this person didn't know is that I have more in common with you than my own parents. Because we know Jesus. If you are in this room, you know Jesus. I know you more than my own parents. And so that is the thing that can unify us. And so everything else can be secondary. Verse 24. It says, but God has so composed the body, giving greater honor to the part that lacked it, that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another. We actually have to appreciate our differences. And so this is the thing. We can't just tolerate each other's differences. Now what does it look like to appreciate each other's differences? Let there be no division between different people. Earlier in the chapter, Paul says that if the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? Basically, if everyone like were like you, that might be a really scary place to be in, right? If we really understood our strengths and our weaknesses, we need each other and we need each other's differences. Think about a person that gets on your nerves. Let's do a little experiment. Think about a person that gets on your nerves. I'll give you some time to pretend like it takes you so long. Like, oh, I can't think of anyone, Zach. So we have this person in your mind. This person gets on your nerves because they're different than you. Now, think about something that they're better at than you. And there is something. Because they have different giftings. And so it's okay that they get on your nerves, but what does it look like to learn to appreciate it? Lauren and I, my wife, we have a good set of friends, and we go over to their dinner sometimes. They're great people, but it's just funny. You know those after, like, if you ever do, like, a double date hangout or, like, a group hangout, you have, like, a debrief after? We often joke, how much would you pay to hear that couple's debrief? Anyways, that's just a fun thing you talk about. It's really good, though. We have this side, but we have good friends, and after we hang out with them, it's like, oh, we don't want to hear their debrief because we're so close, and that's a good feeling. But anyways, sorry. This couple, they're great. They're our friends. We go and hang out with them, and their life is a little chaotic, just to be honest. Like, we go there, and they have two little kids, and, like, things are all over the place, and things are broken and messy, and they're cleaning up, and they're, like, even when we show up, they're like, was that tonight where we hang out? Oh, yeah, come on in. That's fine. We're like, okay. And it's wild, but what they do so well is as soon as we get there, yeah, come on in. Can we give you food? Can we give you drinks? Like, again, offering. Hey, come here, sit here. No, just come into our messiness. And so as much as, like, their chaoticness gets on our nerves, their hospitality is one that we strive for. And this is something that I don't know how to reconcile all of those pieces, but it's something I want to keep diving into. Say your organizedness is something that is not good, gets on my nerves. You should remember if you invited us over. But your hospitality is something that I strive for. And so maybe you're hearing this, you're feeling a little overwhelmed, right? Especially as you're looking in. This is a convicting thing for me because I start to look at other people's traits and start to see my own faults. And what does it look like to even forgive? Maybe there's some people that we have to forgive. We don't have to go. If it's something in your heart, don't go and forgive that person. Just, you can bring that to God, right? And what does it look like to actually do this well? And I got to just give you the secret answer. No matter how hard you try this, you will fail. It is impossible. But luckily, we serve a good God who has already accomplished all of this. See, Jesus went to the cross 2,000 years ago. He died. He rose again. And on the cross, he said, "It is finished. Forgive them, for they know not what they do." And so it is not about our strength in doing this. It's about looking to the God of the universe who already accomplished this. And so we can actually, through Jesus, accomplish this. We don't have to do this on our own. In fact, if we tried, it wouldn't work. And I just want to leave you with one story just to encourage you that wherever you are, God has you there and he will use you. And especially today, 2023, in this weird world, there's a lot of places that God needs to reach, and he needs a lot of people to reach those places. And so if you're thinking that God can't use me or maybe I'm not in the right place, let me leave you with this story. So for the past, I switched roles in February, but before that I was on staff at Village Church. I was the online pastor, and I still don't know what that means. But I got to have lots of really good conversations because basically my only job was just finding people who engage digitally, reaching out to them, having conversations with them, trying to connect them, love them. And I had a lot of crazy, awesome conversations. And one of these was Lori. So Lori started attending Village. She was looking, and I met Lori, and I started learning about Lori. And Lori had a group of people that she'd created a community with online. They lived all over the world, and that brought her to Village Church. And I met Lori, and I was like, how'd you meet all these people? And so Lori's two teenage sons started playing a mobile gaming app, like an app on your phone. Like, I don't know what it was, but And so, like a good mother, she was like, well, I got to be relevant. I'm going to play the game. And as soon as she downloaded it, her kids stopped playing. But she kept playing. And she eventually met people online. And she got like a little group together. And she started like messaging these people and getting Zoom calls with these people. And they had a little group going. And so one of the ladies that she met was, her name was Kat. And Kat lives in England. Like, across the world. Now, I got to meet Kat later on, and Kat has a crazy story. Anything horrible that you can think of has happened to Kat. Relationship, health issues, mental health. She was down, like, suicidal. It was broken. But Lori started messaging with her and talking with her, became really good friends with her. And one night, in middle of the night in England, middle of the day here, Kat was on the phone with Lori, and she was walking around and at the lowest of lows, and she was talking to Lori, and she's like, I've just been walking in the middle of the night, and I'm at a church. And Lori said, I think there's a reason that you're at a church. But still, I've told this story like so many times. Okay. She said, there's a reason that you're at church. And she shares with her the gospel, and in that moment, Kat gives her life to Jesus. And so they start doing like online community group, and that's what brought them to Village Church, to say we need a church that's like digital. And so I was so blessed to be part of them. And so I'm talking to Kat later on, and she tells me this whole story, and it's amazing. And this is great. And she says to me, I want to get baptized. I'm like, okay, that's cool. I'm an online pastor, but I still believe in like physical water baptism. So okay, let's figure this out. And she tells me, I'm like, hey, I'm just so happened to be going to London to the Alpha Conference in a couple months. Like, could we meet up and we could do a baptism? She's like, that's perfect. So I go to London. I go out to where she is. I take a train. It was like kind of farther than where I was, but I bring one of my friends with me. And we go out. And in the backyard, in the middle of suburbs in the UK, with Lori on Zoom and a couple of her friends, I baptized Kat. And this was all because of a mobile gaming app. Yeah, it's ridiculous. And listen, so God has placed you in a specific situation. If it's less ridiculous than that, then I guarantee you, God has ordained it. If you're a teacher, an accountant, a business owner, retired, if you serve in kids' ministry, small groups, worship, he has you there for a specific reason. Your neighbors are specifically there. Your friend group, as much as they get on your nerve, are specifically there. Your interests, I guarantee you, God has put that on your heart. Now, how do you not keep those interests to yourself, but go out and share those interests and find some people in this world that you can love? I believe that for this church. I believe that for the city of Vancouver. We serve a good God who has good plans. So Jesus, thank you that you are a good God. Thank you that you have placed us in our specific situation, and it is not for any purpose, but it is for your glory, that we can love those people around us, that we can share your word. And that is not a daunting task, because you have gone before us. You have given us everything that we need. We just need to be present. We need to love. And we need to share your gospel, however that looks. So I pray a blessing on everyone in this room, and myself included, that you would help us do that more boldly, that you'd help us look around to those people who are different than us, that we can love and forgive, we can start to be more unified as a church. Jesus, you are great. We love you, and we pray all this in your glorious name. Amen.